Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I am your host, Gina Savage. I want to welcome our WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide, subscribers on iTunes, etc. We have a fabulous guest for our, well, I call this episode, it's actually episode 69, which you would think, you know, I'd have some, you know, some sexual connotation with that, some kind of crazy. Well, I guess it'll be sexual.
Well, your voice is so sexy. I was just going to comment how sexy your voice sounds.
Thank you.
I know, I'm turned on just listening to the way you just said thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Carrie Louise. Here we are with Carrie Louise.
Hi. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We're not going to 69.
I just interrupted my intro. I heckled my own self because you said 69.
I said 69. Well, yeah, definitely not. I love you. That's not happening. But let me tell the folks about you. If they haven't already discovered you through America's Got Last Comic Standing and Tough Crowd and the Howard Stern TV and The View and Montel and Nick Moms and Stand Up and Stilettos and the did I say The View and Comedy Central. You are everywhere. You had your own show with your husband. Too funny.
TWO FUNNY.
Right. So
because my husband's also a stand up. So
yes, we'll get to him later.
Yeah. It's all about me tonight.
It's all about you. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great. I want to jump right in. Clearly from your accent, you are from Boston, right?
I didn't hide it. Well, I must be tired.
You must be tired. Do you ever talk to Sue Costello, another Bostonian, about your mutual accents? No one ever loses their accent. I know I'm very New York, but, you're a Bostonian.
Yeah, I had to get rid of my accent for one of the agents to sign me. They wouldn't sign me unless I went to a speech therapist.
She had to come to my apartment.
Yeah, she had to come to my apartment and work with me for an hour. I was exhausted. It is exhusting. It's hard.
It's hard to do.
Boston is such a lazy accent. We don't put our tongue up into our teeth and we don't pronounce. That's why it's really just like hard. It's like a lazy tongue. We have a lazy tongue.
Why are you guys lazy? Well, you're not lazy, but what happened there?
I don't know. And that's why it sounds so ignorant. And it is, because we're Boston people are lazy, just in the speaking.
Now, I don't know a lot about that area. Like, were you in Boston or a suburb near or?
Suburb of Boston. Okay. That's where I started comedy. I was there for about 5 years before I moved to New York.
Okay. What? It was national, supposedly. I mean, there's all these national days, National Sibling Day.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, and I missed National Sibling Day. When was that?
That was apparently yesterday, according to Facebook. That's the source for everything, right? So, brothers and sisters, both?
Yeah, I'm the youngest of four.
Okay.
And I had my sister is the oldest. She's 6 years older than me. Then I had a brother 5 years. And then my other brother is a year older than me. We're like almost Irish twins, and he used to beat the crap out of me.
He did.
All the time. And I think that's why I'm funny, because that's the only way I got out of getting beaten up.
What was his, I know he's a brother. What was he beating you up for? Just being around? just being a little sister?
Yeah, I'm a little brat.
Okay.
And now, well, I have kids of my own, and I have a youngest now.
And he gets picked on all the time by the other guys?
I can see why my brother beat the crap out of me now.
Yeah. Because he's just
a pain in the neck, little one.
Yeah, that's a handful. We got to get to that too.
We'll get to that too. We have so much to talk about.
We have so much. And, you know, like I say a lot, it's such a nice thing to have more than 5 minutes with you at a club. Because when you come to Broadway Comedy Club or wherever club you are, just in passing, we don't really have a lot of time. It's usually a lot going on. And I've known you for years. And this is the first time you're in the red room of my apartment. Talking about your life. So let's talk a little bit more about growing up, in Boston and how you became a stand-up there.
Well, I think being the youngest of four had a lot to do with it. And a lot of people say, were you a class clown? Were you a class clown? You know, and I didn't want to get in trouble. So I wasn't the class clown, because if I got in trouble, I wouldn't be able to play sports. And I was a real tomboy. I played all kinds of sports. And
right.
Field hockey was my sport. I continued to play throughout college and also beyond. So that's how I became the class clown on the field. And during when we were all together, when we had to stretch, that's when I made fun of all the teachers and everybody really liked me. Right. And on the bus to the games, the seniors would play this game where they called all the freshmen. They had to sing Star of the Day, Who Will It Be? And then said, Carrie. I stood up with my field hockey stick and just belted out a tune, changed the words. It was so funny. And then
right.
all the seniors just liked me. Just instant like. And so that's how it started.
All right. Now, you are a very attractive woman. Okay. I'm going to say that, and it's obvious. And so I'm sensing, like, you know, they're definitely paying attention to you as a, you know, for a lot of levels, right? Like you're attractive, you're funny. Did you feel that? Did you sense that?
I was never attractive my whole life.
No way.
I had short hair. I was chunky field hockey player. I was chunky.
You were chunky?
Yeah. And I had short hair. And then when I went into college, I shaved that. My hair was so short, I was able to shave my sorority letters in my hair.
Wow, that is short.
Yeah.
That's pretty short.
I shaved my sorority letters in my hair. I was chunky. I was like a field hockey. People thought I was one of those field hockey dykes. Seriously.
That's crazy. I mean, to look at you today, you would never know. But it's, you know,
but
look,
I worked
we all
on
evolve
myself,
and change.
I worked on myself after that. And then in college, I wanted to do acting, but I couldn't because I was involved in sports. And that was considered, you know, if you were an actress, you were a loser. You were in that part of the group. And I totally didn't want to be the loser. But I had like that punky short hair.
I had that too for a minute.
Yeah. So, but I kept it my whole high school, college life. And then my sorority was running a beauty pageant and they needed contestants. And I said, I'll do it. And I was like, this is the only thing I can get to acting or something. And I loved comedy at the time. So I did my first comedy routine at this pageant.
Get out of here.
There's only four of us. I was representing my school and my sorority. And now I did not know this. I won. All right, there was three other gay guys, but at least I won.
Right.
And next thing I know, I'm in the New Hampshire. I went to school in New Hampshire. New Hampshire State Pageant.
What?
Representing Miss Plymouth State. If
wow.
I had won, I would have been going to Atlantic City doing, I would be Miss America, Miss New Hampshire.
That's crazy.
Who knew that was going to, right. I still had short hair. I had to grow my hair. I didn't know. After I won, they're like, hey, great. Then they gave me a 3-ring binder, like this thick. And they said, you have to start studying. You're going to be in this. I'm like, oh, my God. I started growing out my hair, dieting, and then doing comedy. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was with 12 JonBenet Ramsey types. Gorgeous. They all loved me because I was not a threat.
You know, what's that movie with, you know who I'm thinking of, that actress?
Miss Congeniality.
Yes, it's a very Miss Congeniality
with,
story right now.
Sandra Bullock. And
thank
that's
you.
Exactly what I won. I won Miss Congeniality.
Get out of here.
In the New York State, the New Hampshire State pageant. I was in front, second
Were
time on
Were you also
stage.
A cop?
No, I know. It's totally. It was totally like that. Second
right.
time on stage
right.
doing comedy, I was in front of like 500 people, 1,000 people. I don't know what the theater held. And that was scary
That
for
is
me.
Very
you
scary.
You know how hard comedy
Yeah,
was.
It's hard enough. And then you're not doing it. You weren't really doing
it. I had no idea what I was doing. I had to do 2 minutes and 30 seconds worth of stuff. I knew
That's
to write my own
really
stuff.
Really ballsy.
And how weird is it now that I'm teaching comedy? I also teach a comedy class. But it's weird how I just instinctually knew write my own stuff, create this, and the timing. It just came easy to me.
Okay. Were you a writer to some degree in school? Were you?
No, which is why I can't believe I wrote a book, because I can't spell worth crap. What? If anyone can, I don't even. And then spell check came along, but no, I'm not.
Yeah, you wrote a book. We'll talk about that even more. It is called Mean Mommy. We'll talk about it now for a second. We'll talk about Mean Mommy. You know, it's... You're a mom of three.
Yes.
Three boys. And it would be, if you came out, like if I was a mom, I'm not a mom. I'm just like, you know, you talk about it in your act, like how women look at other women, which is, you know, really a funny bit that you have about, like, you know, walk into a place with your man and, you know, you see a pretty girl and you know he's looking at her, but you're looking at her too. It's like,
right.
I couldn't imagine you, like, at the PTA being the other mom, like, you're a gorgeous mom. You're a gorgeous, fit mom. You also teach. You teach aerobics.
Yes,
you're
I
a
do,
trainer
yeah.
too. I mean,
yeah.
You kind of got a real balanced thing going on. We'll get to Mean Mommy because I want to hear all the chapters of what's going on in there. So, what happens after that pageant? And because obviously, New Hampshire you know, whatever. Yeah. That didn't happen. But you end up doing stand-up. What goes on after that?
So then I graduated, and I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do. And so my first open mic was in Boston the same year I graduated. And I kind of elaborated. I only had 2 minutes and 30 seconds of my act, and then I elaborated because then they gave me 5 minutes. And then the rest is history. I think Boston is a great town to work.
Yeah, a lot of Boston comics.
A lot of Boston comics.
A lot of good stuff.
Huge and funny. And I think they just, it's such a great town to work. And I just worked my butt off in trying to, you know, get there. And then I moved to New York.
Did you find it, I mean, I ask this of every comic, but did you find it hard to work? Were there other females that you were working with there? Did you have, you know, comedy compatriots that helped you along? Or were you kind of like an island unto yourself doing this? Well, how did that, you know, unfold
for
you?
Some of the guys would help you. It's a boys town, though. I can't lie to you. Boston's a boys town. It's still
is. Robert Kelly time?
Well, Robert Kelly was in my pledge class. Bill Burr, good friend of mine, in my pledge class. We used to make fun of him because he took a comedy class. I used to make fun of him. And
Bill Burr,
Dane Cook.
Bill took the comedy class?
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah.
So don't make fun of comedy classes, people.
Right, I know.
You know, you took a class. Yeah, yeah.
I totally made fun of them. And now I'm a teacher. And we would make fun of comics who turned into teachers. We would make fun of that too. And we would make fun of people selling buttons at the end of their set. Now I'm selling books and CDs. And I mean, it just, times have changed. So don't judge anybody.
Don't
period,
judge.
Ever.
Yeah.
Because now I'm doing it all.
You are doing it all.
The things that we all made fun of. So, but those were all people in my pledge class. Yeah, real funny people.
Okay, so you're doing this, and then, you know, when do you come to New York?
So then I, about 5 years into doing comedy in Boston and juggling, you know, everything, I decided, let's be serious now and go into New York and really start working. And I moved to a fifth floor. It was a sixth floor. Then the next year, I moved to a five floor.
Right. You lived in this is great. You lived in this neighborhood. I love that you're like, she's so successful. You're successful. You have a nice, beautiful house. I'm like, Carrie's coming over, and I'm thinking, oh my God, she's walking up these five flights of steps, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like living this single life. You know, I'm awed by your life. At the same time, I know that like part of your life is you do need a mommy minute. You know, I have like. I don't know how many minutes are in a day. Like I have all those minutes. I can take those kids for you. But, you know, you always, the grass is always greener, I think, you know, on some level, like you have got a full life and I feel like even in my single world, I've got like a really full life. All right, that was a tangent.
Well, you know, yeah. Well, because I look back and all the things that I do now with the kids is like, oh my God, why didn't I get everything done when I was single? Like,
well, that's the thing.
Where did
how
the time
did
go?
You, but how did you? Because all right, you're doing stand up in New York. What's the and you're getting like successes, I guess, little you know. Whatever, Comedy Central or Stand Up in Stiletto. I don't know what came first. What's the first, like, TV?
My first real good, successful thing that I got in New York was the HBO Aspen Comedy Festival.
Okay. And that's 2004, is it? Or earlier?
Oh, way earlier.
Way earlier. Sorry, what am I thinking of?
Yeah, because I moved here in 95, and I got there. I got it soon after that, so probably 96.
Oh, shit.
96,
that's way
97.
Earlier.
That was my first, you know, that made me, everybody was like, who's this Carrie Lewis? Because I was trying to get into the clubs. And I got it. And that helped me get in more into the clubs. People were like, ooh, who's this Carrie Lewis? Like, I was a new face. So I wasn't really starting all over again as an open micer in New York. So
so that's 96?
96, yeah.
96. So right out of the gate, essentially, you're getting good work. You're getting good and recognition. When do you meet and your husband, who is also a comic?
We moved down together. We met in Boston. He's from he's from Rhode Island. Tom.
What?
And
I thought you guys met here.
We knew each other in Boston, and yeah, it's also a romantic story.
All right. Well.
So he moved. We moved down here together.
You moved here together. So did people know you were dating when you came here? They did.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know. I guess.
But we had a breakup too. So that's maybe what it was. When we broke up, the whole comedy community broke up, but they didn't know what to do.
They didn't know what happened.
Because they liked me, they liked Tom, and they felt bad for me, they felt bad for Tom, and it was just like, it was.
All right, for a single girl, like myself. How did that look, and how long did that last for you guys?
Didn't last that long.
Like a month?
He's like, that's it. I'm moving out. And he moved like two blocks away.
Yeah, I had that once with my ex-husband.
And I knew it was fate, though. I knew, right. I knew I was going to run into him, and because it was, you know, New York. He lived right. I knew it was fate. Right. And we did. We ran into each other in his bedroom. I don't know how that happened. But,
yeah.
And then we got back together again. And the whole comedy community was so happy. They're like, oh, thank God. Because they just wanted us back together. You could feel it. Like, everybody was right. Like, oh, I feel so bad. And they're like, oh, Tom just walked in here. And then it was, like, all weird if Tom and I were working at the same time and we walked into the club at the same time. And everybody, like, we were okay with it, but you could see everybody else was like, oh, my God, what's going to happen?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, a lot of times, at least in my personal experience with comedians and dating them, it doesn't always work out because of... So what do you attribute, and before the kids, what do you attribute that? It working out, how's the dynamic between the two of you?
It was really tough, you know, especially, and I think that's what we grew up. I think that's what it was too, because it's tough moving into the city. We were both trying to make a name for ourselves, and it's like, I don't know if you know of like living with roommates who are the same, both comedians, with the phones ringing off the hook with that person. I mean, they're your roommate, you're happy. He was my, you know, boyfriend. I was happy the phone was ringing off the hook for him, but it was just a reminder that it's not for me. So right. It was depressing. It was difficult. And other people had a problem with it, too. Like, Esty would call the house, and I would answer. And I'm like, hello. She's like, oh. Is Tom there? Esty is a booker of the Boston Comedy
Of the Comedy
The Comedy Cellar.
Comedy Cellar.
Oops, sorry.
That's okay. I was the booker of the
Boston. right. Then but you would call, and I'd be like, hi.
Yeah, but I would do my impression of Esty. Hello, Kitty. Wait, let's see if I can do it. Tonight on the show, we have Tom Cotter and Greer Barnes. Tonight on the show, Tom Cotter, Greer Barnes, Nick Griffin, and everyone but you tonight on the show.
Right. Don't call me again. But so we got two different landlines, and that helped a little bit. It helped so I didn't have to answer his phone, and no one was, you know, feeling weird.
Because of comics and, like, you know, some of us are, like, depressives or whatever. I mean, did you guys have any of that kind of...
I was mental, happy for all his success.
You were always happy.
Always
and
happy
always
for
encouraging?
Him. And always encouraging. It was just a reminder that I had to work harder and get... It was a reminder of what I wasn't getting, that there was actually work out there. You know,
right.
It was just a reminder.
Fair enough. What about when he would go on the road and stuff? Did you have... I mean, did you always feel confident in your relationship? Or were there periods of doubt? Or this, I don't know if we can do this? Or,
Was, absolutely. Yeah. And especially early on. And I think that, like when I said, I grew up... and we, with the breakup, I grew up a little bit. I learned a lot about myself. He learned a lot about himself. We realized that, and I think that breakup was the best thing that ever happened to us, because when we got back together again, we knew it was real, and we knew that this was what we wanted. Yeah, there was times, like I said, you know how I have this, like, I can just
We were sense, talking before the show about, yeah.
About
six,
you can sense
sure.
someone... Mm-hmm. is going to break up with you or not
right or you know
there.
You're not the right fit and you're yeah. like you see it you know whatever.
So there was times that I felt that way and I would always confront him and he'd communicate and things like that. I mean that like I said, that breakup, I cleaned out my closet literally and cleaned out my whole life and he did the same. And so I think all the jealousy and all that stuff and him going on the road just was to the wayside, because I actually grew up. And then when you put kids in the mix, then when we had kids, I mean, there's no time.
There's no time.
No time for any of that crap.
Yeah,
like,
you
thinking
can't,
about where he is or what he's
right.
doing.
Right. Yeah, because it's like, you know, it's almost so self-centered, right? That you know, you can't allow for that when you have kids. And I don't have kids, so there's a lot of time to be self-centered. I'm always working on that fact, not being self-centered. With the... soon to be coming of Mother's Day, mm-hmm. and you are a mom of three.
Yes.
Are your parents still together? Or
yes,
they are.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a great foundation. Like, no matter what, that they've worked through whatever issues people go through. It's hard enough staying together, regardless, right? So you have these kids, and how soon after you get married do you have your first?
All right, I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
First of all, I knew about, if anybody knows who Tom Cotter is, everybody tells me, like, his managers and his agents, they're like, oh my God, that kid, that he's the nicest kid. He didn't cancel. He could have canceled and he didn't. He's so loyal. Yep. Like, if you know about Tom, if he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it, and he's loyal. And I'm like, you're preaching to the choir. That's why I married the guy.
Right.
I mean, he's just so loyal.
He's a man of his word.
And he's a man of his word, and I knew it, and I knew that this was the guy I wanted to be with. So that being said, I knew that anytime he's going on the road or doing this, he's working hard for the family, and so am I. It's a team. We are definitely a team. So when we moved, as soon as we got married, we moved to Hollywood for about 3 months. We were paying two rents because he had a great manager, the same manager as Ray Romano.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves Raymond, and I had a great manager who also managed Drew Carey and Tim Allen.
Right,
he was my manager. We're like, no brainer, let's go. It's pilot season. We're newly married, so this was our honeymoon. In L.A. for 3 months, pilot season, we're going to get a sitcom, me and him. Who wouldn't? I'm both talented people.
Talented people. Yeah. Sounds like a great idea. We're going to make it after
happen,
all.
Yes.
Yes.
We did not go on one audition. We sat on our butts all day. There was a
what
time.
Were you, what?
I know. I don't know. We didn't go on any auditions. I don't know what happened. We didn't even.
Did you just this California sun do something?
We did yoga in the middle of the afternoon. Then I had to take a nap. I mean, yoga is, you have to do yoga if you're living in LA, in Hollywood. I mean, it's the rule. They kick you out. They literally, if you don't find yoga class in 3 days, they buy your ticket. But
sushi, did you eat a lot of sushi too?
We did. We went out to lunch. And those were the days, though. We thought we were struggling, and those were the days.
Yeah.
Those were amazing days. And we collaborated with a lot of other comedians who were doing in the same boat. I remember we went to the movies and we looked down a bunch of comedians. You couldn't afford that show if you wanted to. And we were all at the movies like
Right. So there you are, you're just doing nothing.
Doing nothing. So what we decided to do was have sex.
I love that. That's something.
So we said, you know what? Let's have sex. First time out of the gate, not any protection at all. Like, let's just try because we're not going to get pregnant right away. But we want to in about 3 or 4 months, I really want to try. But let's just try now. Boom. Right out of the gate.
Wow.
And I knew I was pregnant. This is my one and only audition. I finally got an audition. They were looking for me in New York. Wasn't even my managers. They were looking for me in New York.
Right.
I call my New York home phone and they leave a message. So I go, well, I'm here. Can I do the audition here? They're like, okay. They set up an audition. I do it. I get a call back. Now, this is how fast things work. Between that and a call back, I get pregnancy boobs. Huge. They're huge. They grow huge. So now I think I'm pregnant. I'm like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. I must be pregnant. I don't know for sure.
Right.
But that's on my mind. You know, every time you get a call back, it's yours to lose. And then you panic and you lose it.
Yes.
I didn't this time. Because I thought the boobs helped. The big boobs helped.
Oh, that's good.
And I thought I was pregnant. So the whole time I'm like, oh my God, I think I'm pregnant. And I just nailed the audition because I wasn't thinking about losing it. I wasn't thinking so hard.
Right. You had other things on your mind. So it was like, I'll just show up for this thing.
And do it. Yeah.
And do it.
And do you know what it was? It was the pilot for Last Comic Standing. I sold the show, Last Comic Standing. It was with Jay Moore and it was called Comic House. And so they're like, we think we like you. You're number one on our list. We'll give you a call. Then I had to move back to New York. It was the last day I was in New York. The last day I was in L.A.
Oh my God. So you had
We sat for 3 months doing nothing. That last day.
So that was the first season, the very first.
It wasn't even the first season.
It was the pilot.
It was the pilot that sold the show.
Okay.
It was called Comic House and it was five comics in a house and no one left. And we're like, this is boring. Someone's going to get off the island. And then they revamped it and then the first season. I'll tell you why I couldn't do the first season.
Okay.
So I go home after that audition. I go home. Tom meets me home, and I said, you know, I think I'm pregnant. Let's take the pregnancy test together. Let's wait till we get together back in New York. I take the pregnancy test. I'm pregnant. I'm like, oh, my God. Let me get I'll get a doctor's appointment. I go to my doctor's appointment. He had an audition. He couldn't go with me. And the next thing you know, he's checking to see if I'm pregnant. So he has a sonogram in my, you know.
Right.
And he's moving. He's like, look at that. That's on the monitor. And I'm like, he goes, that's it. And it looks like a little circle with a diamond ring. It looked like a diamond ring. I'm like, oh, that's neat. And then he turns it around and I'm like, oh my God, that looks like another diamond ring. And then he's like, that's interesting. I'm like, what do you mean that's interesting? What are you talking about? Oh my God, I'm having twins. He goes, it looks like you're having twins. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
That was so weird. My legs are spread. I have a foreign object in between my legs.
Yes.
I'm crying. I can't believe
it. It's more than you can imagine happening.
More than I can imagine happening until I get out of the doctor's office. I walk out. I tell my husband I want to surprise him. I go, come home right away. Don't dilly-dally. From your audition, I have something to tell you. Then I hang up. The phone rings. It's my manager. You got the pilot. They need you this weekend to film for a whole weekend. I had to go back out to L.A.
That's incredible.
Same day.
Right.
The thing I was holding off on, not having kids because I wanted to be famous before I had it, all happened in one day.
All happened at once. Well, that's the thing. I really believe this, too. I think you have to just live your life, right? You have to live it.
Absolutely.
No matter what you think is going to happen or not happen, because it will happen.
You're right.
It will happen. If you are laying the groundwork, I guess I'll say this because a lot of comedians listen to this. A lot of aspiring comedians listen to this. But, you know, just when I think, you know, I should quit doing something or not do something, I just do whatever is on the table, something happens. And it may not, like a life event, like having children, or it may be a relationship, or it may be a breakup, or it may be a situation with your family in some level, but just live your life, but you know, keep at it. So
absolutely.
you keep at it. So after that, it's just a whirlwind.
And then it's a whirlwind. I go do the pilot. I pretend I'm drinking, you know, all that stuff.
Oh.
And
with your big boob self.
My big boob self.
Right.
And then we have to move because I'm living on a fifth floor walk-up with twins. So
with
we
twins.
Had to move. So then we moved to Harlem, which is what families do when they're going to have a baby start a new life.
Really white families. That's what they do. They move
whitest
to Harlem. You are
the
whitest people ever are in Harlem. How did that go?
Well, you know, we used to live on the Upper East Side, and as you know, you're on the Upper East Side, and it's snobby up here. It's snobby.
It
we were in rent control.
Right.
Other than us, everybody else, is, even the homeless guys don't talk to you when you're on the Upper East Side. So we moved to
Harlem. Right. Dollar.
So we moved to Harlem, and everybody's nice to you in Harlem. They were like, even the homeless guys wanted to talk to me. They're like, those are twins. They were spitting all over my twins. Like, those are twins. God bless the twins. And I'm like, okay, they're spitting. It got so bad, I had to put the rain guard on the stroller.
That's hilarious.
Even though it wasn't raining, then all the homeless guys wanted to squeegee it. But it was a little scary. It was a little scary, but we were part of that gentrification of Harlem. So we were right in there, and now we can't afford our apartment.
Here come the white people. Yeah. Really? You're not there now,
We're
though.
Not there now. We moved, and that helped us buy our house in the suburbs.
Did
so
you give
I was
that place
to,
up?
Gave it up. Had
okay,
to,
just
yeah.
wondering.
I wanted to sublet it.
Right.
I wanted to, you know, but we just couldn't afford it. We couldn't afford a down payment on a, you know, a really nice house. So now we have a really nice house and a cul-de-sac. Thank God for Harlem. You know, being white in Harlem for 5 years and not getting killed.
Yeah.
I was able to get.
Yeah, I have, you know, I'm a native New Yorker and I pride myself on being able to go anywhere in the city. I mean, and have, you know, but, you know, I'm white.
We can't, yeah, it's, but.
What does
but,
that mean? I don't even know what that means.
They were building,
white woman.
The 5 years that I was there, they were building everything, you know, and there's now $1 million apartments.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've noticed, and just, you know, to change the subject a little bit, just around the city of New York, you know, all these places, even Times Square, you know, tourists coming into the city, particularly, you know, to the Broadway Comedy Club. Look at that, I'm plugging Al Martin. It's like every area that is developing here, you know, it's nice to on some level to see that. But on, you know, the certain character aspect we're losing and we lose it all the time.
Right. Which is why I think we still need to have the rent control and all that stuff. If we don't keep that, we're not going to have Broadway plays. We're not going to have all the things that New York is great for, the people that come to New York for.
Right. I mean, it's hard enough, I mean, economy-wise, but I'm just going to say this, you know, keep it up. And, you know, the middle class won't be able to live in Manhattan. And, you know, well, it's broader issues all the way around. Bernie Sanders, the end.
Yes.
That's so messed up. We've been talking about Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and, well, not so much Bernie Sanders, but, you know, Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to ask your political views
right
now.
I'm But so confused. I think I'm with the rest of the country. We're just so confused.
Yeah, the only thing good about Donald Trump right now is Daryl Hammond's impression of him. That's about the only thing I can say about that. So let's talk about life now. You're in the suburbs, I guess. What do you call where you are?
Yeah, I'm in the suburbs, and I have a
what
minivan.
What is that land you live in?
And I float around in a minivan.
You really do that with the kids?
I really do that with the kids.
PTA and the whole...
I'm not the PTA.
You're not PTA?
No. Like, I'm not... The only reason why you'll find me in a PTA meeting is only for jokes and research. That would be the only reason why. No, but I just give them the money.
You just give them
money. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not.
Okay. So.
I can't get involved in that crap. You know, women. I don't go there. No.
Do those. All right. Because for the mothers out there.
It's like the beauty pageant.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, some work, some don't work. I don't know. You guys, look. Oh, they're famous. I mean, like, there's fame and notoriety around you guys. I mean, do you get any flack for the Cotters? the Cotters with their kids in the minivan.
I just tell the PTA, look, I'm not going to be involved in any of your little bake sales or any of that, but I'll do a comedy show for you for free.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. And then
they like that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I have to just check this text message.
Is because it from
it's the
child?
Kids going
okay.
to.
What are they doing?
Well, one's sick, homesick. This is a great day. I'm like, well, you're on your own. Mommy has to work, and then the other one has a field a baseball game, and my neighbor's driving him.
What
to the
are their
baseball
ages?
Game.
What do we have
the
now?
The twins are 13. I have two teenagers at my house.
13-year-old boys.
Yes.
Okay, that's already gross.
It's already gross.
That's gross.
That's why we're on episode 69. Okay.
I was hoping you'd say that. Right. So anyway, 13 and the baby. Well, he's
okay. And the little one is 8. Okay. He wants to be a teenager, and that's the problem.
Well, that is the problem because that's the exact 8 and 13. So that's 5. Years difference, right? 8, 13,
yes.
Right?
And
doing I wanted the math
to,
right.
It is 5 years. And
it is
five. I wanted to be pregnant, get pregnant sooner, but husband was always on the road. let's go to L.A. again.
Let me ask you. Okay, getting back to that, is that also part of what keeps the thing alive? Like he's away. There's some longing there.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I think monotony and monogamy on that level every single day with someone would breed contempt. I do think because you're in that person's face all the time.
People ask me how do I do it? It's because he goes on the road and when he comes back, it's like he ruins my whole routine. I had everything all set. He
you're
comes home
bee.
And he's like, who are you? And what are you doing here
in the home he helped create?
Right, I know.
And then you're like, oh, you're in the place that
I'll have the kids all nestled in bed, ready to go to
nestled.
Bed.
They nestle.
Everything's a shower.
No nestling going on in that
they're
house.
They're clean. They have clean sheets.
All right, they
finally,
nestle. Right.
He goes, are they up? I just want to say goodnight. I'm like, no, they're sleeping. They're sleeping. No, I think I can hear them. I just want to say goodnight. I'm like, no. He goes in there. I'm just going to say prayers. I promise. The next thing you know, they're jumping on the bed, singing the Our Father with their trophies as microphones.
That's so nice.
At, past bedtime.
Look at me. I'm like, that's so
nice. Oh, no, it is nice. And then I deal with them crying the next day because they're overtired.
Right. Because dad came in.
Because daddy came in.
He's not telling jokes, though. He's coming in there. Well, maybe he's like
he's
being.
Telling
he's
jokes.
Telling
I have to reteach.
Telling jokes.
I got
to
reteach. Everyone's like, oh, you have such a fun daddy. Mm. I have to reteach everything.
So how did you have time to write Mean Mommy? What makes you so mean?
Well, Mean Mommy is derived from the poem, which is the poem
Thank
is
you.
An unknown author. And it's like, I don't have the poem with me. Shoot,
well,
that's
wait.
One thing I didn't
Is it
out.
Hard to Google or find?
Oh, yeah, you can. No, yeah, I can. Yeah, we'll Google it.
All right. Jim, you want to give us a... Jim is a... As those of you who ever tune in.
Mean Mommy, author is unknown. But it's all about,
Mean
and we'll
Mommy,
read it.
Author
yeah.
unknown. Jim's on that.
And that was hanging in my house, and it was all about, you
Who
know,
got it for
mean,
you, Tom?
No, it was hanging in my house as a child. My brother gave it to my mother. and read it.
Okay, so it's always been a part of your
Yes, I was always reading, and peripheral. I'm like, oh, my mom's a mean mommy because she wants me to be a good citizen when I grow up. That she's, you know, mean mommy.
Oh, that's mean.
Makes you do chores. Mean mommy makes you have a right. curfew. Mean mommy makes you, you know, find better friends. Mean mommy. So, but right. basically that's why I named my book Mean Mommy, because I love that poem when growing up.
Right. And prior to that, before we read the poem, you did the Mommy Minutes.
Right.
Which clearly any mom that's out there knows they pretty much only get a minute to themselves.
Right.
So that's how that, I would assume.
That's how that came about. But plus, I couldn't go into the city all the time and do work. I couldn't go and do cruises for a week on end because my husband was doing that and I couldn't do that. I didn't fast forward marrying a comedian. I didn't fast forward that, you know, maybe I should marry someone else that could stay home while I went on the road.
Right, right.
So I put my career on the back burner, and then I'm like, well, what else can I do? And it was the time that everybody was watching YouTube, and there was no industry going out anyway, and it was something that I could do at home.
Right, something that you could do creative for yourself, that is, you know, that's
great.
Keep
my mind creatively
going.
Because
you would be
going
crazy not being able to do your work. Right.
Right. So that gave me a mommy minute and gave me be able to be creative in another way. And I knew that if moms were watching it, they could feel not so alone, because being a mom is very lonely. It is. It's tough. It's
yeah,
lonely.
I would think so, especially if you're on your own a good deal of the time. If
right.
he's on the road, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work anyway.
And you just need a
it's
minute
exhausting.
To yourself to
yeah.
laugh and say, oh, my God, I'm not alone. So that's how that happened. And some of the mommy minutes are in my book, the stories, but then there's a lot of other in-depth, like, really secrets, too, as
oh,
well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's some secrets in there.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I watch your mommy minutes, and, you know, I watched my sister's kids when they were little. I don't have kids, but I watched her kids when they were small. And even in the week she went away on a business trip and her husband had to work, so I was like called in to do this.
Yes.
And you know, like you have to get someone to do that when that happens, right? So that it was me, and I felt very incapable. And yet, and this is, I just want to tell this really quick story. I might have told it on another podcast, but so I think my niece at the time is probably, I want to say 5. Maybe she's 5 years old, and, you know, I'm getting her dressed for school, and I'm trying to put her underwear on, and she's, I'm like, let me put your underwear on, and she's got her legs, like they're together, and they're pushed out, but they're together. She won't let me put the underwear on, and I'm like, let me put your underwear on, and she's like, no, and I'm like, let me put your underwear on, and she says, no, and I'm like, why won't you let me, because we had her go, you know, like, I have
yes.
to get her dressed,
yes.
right, and she's like, because I am already wearing underwear, like, she wouldn't, like, I'm struggling, like, she's just like, but, like, just tell me that, like, I'm frustratingly trying to
oh
get the kid
God.
Ready, and the other one is crying, and it's just, like, and I had this thing where I would, like, act out, because there's comics, and
yeah.
I would act this thing out where I would, like, act like a spider, and I'm, like, I would say, you're driving me up the wall, and then I would act it out. You know, that's what we do. You have to
it.
Come up with you're driving, and then I for the 8-year old. But I mean, I'm sure you had. I mean, I have no idea what you had to
you
struggle
needed
with.
A mommy minute, yeah,
I needed
absolutely.
A mommy
that,
minute for
getting
one
out
week,
of the house, and then times two. Everything was times two.
Right. What do we got going?
No, that's a mommy minute.
Well,
but
that's a mommy minute.
Mommy.
We want me,
just
mommy.
Go do the he got on my website.
Yeah,
mommy
it's,
minute.
It's a great thing.
But,
all right.
Yeah, so if you want a minute to yourself, there's a bunch of funny videos on mymommyminute.com.
Oh, well, we'll absolutely. And we'll find that. We'll
go
find
to Mean Mommy, though. And it's author unknown. Say Mean Mommy poem, author unknown. Google
He'll find that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, we'll find the poem and then, but talk about the book now, because that's coming out. When is that coming?
It's coming out, well,
Mother's Day.
Of course. it's like the best gift you can get a mom, a new mom, any mom. It's a little edgy, so the mousy type moms, maybe not if they're going to write me hate mail, because, you know, I'm too busy with kids to be reading hate mail, but it would do her some good. So it's for everybody.
All right, so talk about what's going on. Like, can you talk about some of the chapters? What are the different chapters of your book?
All right.
That people can look forward to.
Look forward to dealing with... Vagina fitness is one of the chapters.
Yeah, I can look forward to that now. I'd like to keep that fit.
This is a funny chapter. This is called Husband Bashing, The Guilty Pleasure. And what is so funny is I had to have my husband edit it. And it's shitting all over him. And he's like, I can't believe I'm helping you edit this chapter and it's all about me.
Wait, you do that voice.
Yeah,
that's the husband voice.
I think every woman who has a husband imitates their husband the same exact way. We all have the same husband voice and this is it.
Yeah.
So my husband comes home and he goes, I don't know why. Yeah, you didn't tell me.
But they always talk like this.
I know, that's how they sound.
Even the boyfriends do. You can't, we're not going to go there.
diapers, pull-ups, depends. Spectators in my bathroom, vacations.
Spectators in your bathroom.
Get the bucket, he's throwing up again.
Oh, good.
Me, mommy knows best. Oh. Eat your effing broccoli. He's getting evicted through the sunroof.
Oh, that's good.
My amniosacs are joined at the hip. Nighttime daycare. Let me tell you about this.
Okay.
You'll like this. Can I tell you this story?
I would love to.
Without giving away so much from the book. Nighttime daycare was all about this gig I had at the Borgata.
Okay.
You know the gig? The Borgata in Atlantic City. You go down for a week, and I had my twins with me. They were 2 years old. And I was like, I can do this.
Right. Because you could do it all.
Right.
So you got the twins in tow.
So I was all prepared. I had a babysitter. And usually when you're at these casinos, they say 4 hours minimum, and they, you know, up the price. So I made sure that I called and said, look, I'll give you 2 hours for a whole week. Can we do that? And they said yes. So I was so prepared.
Right.
Because being a mom, that's what you do. You become more prepared. I get there. They didn't show up. I called a week before, and then I called the day of. And then the day of, that's when they were like, oh, well, yeah, I'm trying to get someone. I go, I'm going to be on stage in 4 hours. You need to have somebody. Because I got there early, show the kids the room. I go, you need to have somebody right away. I get my kids. They're two.
They're two.
I get them all nestled. They're in bed already. And the guy calls me from the gig, and he's like, where are you? Now, the gig is in the hotel room. That's why I think it's easy. I'll go and do 15. I only have to do 15 minutes, and then I'm done.
Okay.
So I figured I'd get hired for 2 hours. I would work out, shower, do my show, and come back every night. It would be perfect.
Right.
The woman doesn't show up. He's calling me. Where is she? I'm like, they told me they were going to get her. She's supposed to come right now. I'm coming down. The show's about to start. And so I'm on my way because the elevators took a long time and I know they're about to start the show. And I know they called me. She's on her way up. I meet her in the elevator. I go, they're in that room. They're sleeping or about to sleep. I will be back in 15 minutes. Don't do anything. Just stay there. I was like,
That's insane.
It was insane.
It's insane that you have to, you know, stress yourself out before a gig
Before a gig. I ran down, did 15 minutes. I don't even know what I said. The 15 minutes was like on autopilot with comedy. Just did it and ran back up and fired her immediately.
Yes.
And she was like, she had no teeth. It was like, I was leaving them with a crack addict.
Oh,
and
the only thing
that was in the back of my mind was like, Carrie, there are cameras everywhere. This is a casino.
Right.
You're going to be okay.
Right.
That was the worst.
That is frightening. That is absolutely frightening under any circumstance. Like to leave your kids unknown.
And it was an agency. I was going through an agency that the Borgata gave me. So it wasn't like I didn't do my research.
Have you been back since?
So I fired her. I have not been back since.
Okay.
And then the next day I had to find them I found them daycare. It was a nighttime daycare that they do for all the workers. There's a lot of moms that work at night.
All right. Well,
strippers.
Yeah.
All the stripper kids. So my kids hung out with all the stripper kids.
Oh, well, that's better.
For a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to say that the Borgata should offer you another gig.
Yeah.
And pay you a lot of money.
I think so.
I think they should.
Basically saying like what we were talking about is just you got to live your life. You got to just do it.
Yeah, you got to live your life.
And just say, yes, I can do it and go and do the best you can. And that didn't stop me. If I didn't quit then.
Yeah, if you didn't quit it's so frustrating. You haven't got the kids. You're trying to make this, you know, you're planning everything out. You're mapping everything out. You don't exactly sound like a mean mom at this moment, right? You're a very caring and loving mom. But
that's what a mean mom is.
That's what a mean mom is. So getting to that, we did find that poem, author unknown, but I'll just read an excerpt from that. I had the meanest mother in the world. While other kids had candy for breakfast, I had to eat cereal, eggs, and toast. While other kids had cakes and candy for lunch, I had a sandwich. As you can guess, my dinner was different from other kids' dinner, too. My mother insisted on knowing where we were at all times. You would think that we were on a chain gang or something. She had to know who our friends were and what we were doing. I am ashamed to admit it, but she actually had the nerve to break the child labor law. She had us work. We had to wash dishes, make the beds, and learn how to cook. That woman must have stayed awake at night thinking up things for us to do. You are a mean mom.
I am a mean mom.
Well, they obviously need to have more mean moms out there in the world because what's up with these kids?
And that's why I wrote this book. It's also getting back to the basics of parenting. Like, we need to get back to the basics. We've got to screw the whole political correctness of parenting, that everybody wins and everybody gets this and you're not supposed to hit your child and you're not supposed to do all that crap. That to me is, we're fine. Our parents grew up, you know, doing, not knowing everything.
Right.
And we're fine.
Yeah.
And so I think that we really need to give our children responsibilities for their own actions. And we're not. I don't think a lot of mothers are doing that. And I want mothers to get back to the basics and give them responsibility. And that's, you know, if you really fast forward, that's what the problem is today with people not respecting authority.
I have a twofold opinion about, I think respect in general is lacking. I think across the board. And I think, you know, when we had big wheels and things like, I'm not saying the kids don't have outside activities, but we are so, and I'm guilty as an adult, we are in a technological age where the kids are like, they're in their friggin' phones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just observing it. I can't imagine if I had a child that like had it, like, there's my friend's son and he's a creative, he's a brilliant artist, and he's 11 years old, maybe 12 now, but at, you know, at like 9 or 10, they've got these gadgets. You know, we were playing with Barbies,
yeah,
you know, and these kids have these gadgets now, and they're in that world where information is coming to them at like
record speed.
Yeah.
And it's the world that's coming to them to a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I can't imagine parenting. I can't imagine parenting in a day and age where you have to, you know, when we went to school, we thought, hey, our kids are safe at school.
Oh, yeah.
Every day you send your kid to school is like, they're cops. Like, are you going to get shot today? Like, I have no idea. You have every idea.
Well, I don't watch the news now. I cannot watch the news without crying my little eyes out, no matter what it is. It's just, I'm so set. Once you have a kid, once I had a kid, it's like, oh, I can hardly bear the news. It's crazy.
It's really crazy. And I can't, you know, it's in the dichotomy of your life. You know, you've got the kids and everybody's got this that has kids. And, you know, go to work and you have and focus on your focus is to be funny, to take these observational things and make them funny about your life. And then you go in there and you live your life and you live your life. And you have how much time to write this book?
This book is in 10 years. This big book has been in the making for about 10 years.
Okay.
And a lot of it was the mommy minutes. I make myself do one once a month. So some of the things are funny from the mommy minutes. And then I used to write for an article. So some of those things I used to write for Parent Magazine.
Oh, okay.
So every other month I had to write an article there. So some of those articles were in there.
And is that the first test of your writing, like, for you? Like, are we writing for, I mean, other than writing comedy for yourself, this is like, I'm writing this monthly column.
Yeah, and that was short-lived, too, because, I don't know, it was called Dirty Laundry. I don't know why they didn't want it anymore. It was great, great title for me, too.
Yeah, that's a great title.
I'm a little edgy.
Yeah.
So then I had a literary agent look at it, and they didn't like the title, Mean Mommy.
They didn't.
No. And then I put it, that kind of, I put it on the back shelf after that. I was like, all right, well, they don't like it. I'm not a good writer, this, that, and the other. This is stupid, that thing. And it sat for a little bit.
So at what point do you decide to pick it up to go on with your life as the theme?
Then the article helped. I started writing for that article after that. And then I realized I had so much stuff. And I said, I'm going to publish it myself. But so I started really working on it and publishing it. Going to publish it myself. And then a publisher accepted it. And
that's incredible. Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, Willow Street Press is publishing it. So I'm
that's
really
great.
Happy
so
about
that's
that.
Coming out Mother's Day. A little bit about your own mom. What's your relationship like with
She's
her?
She's the meanest mom I know.
She really is.
She's, and you'll read about her in the book a little. She is very, I almost started crying when you were telling me what about your mom. You know, it's so funny.
No, I was going to say I am a little bit Barbara Walters-y with these questions.
Yeah.
You know, tell us about your own mother, your relationship
with that sexy voice.
With
like
your
her.
Mom.
My mom is, she made me work hard. I got my work ethic through her. I remember both my parents weren't college educated, but they pushed me to go to college. I'm dyslexic. How could I write a book? How could I even go to college? And I wanted to play field hockey, and that's why. That was my main reason to go to college for 4 years. I wanted to play field hockey for 4 more years. And I did, and I ended up going to college, and I ended up graduating, and my mom pushed me through the whole thing. And she pushed me to get my lifeguarding certificate. And she kept on telling me, it's important to have a certificate to do something, and you'll get paid more money, and I was involved in sports. And
right, have a skill. Because if you are a skilled worker of some kind, you will always work.
Yeah, and that's what she instilled in me. And I was also involved in sports, and plus I had homework, and homework took me hours to do. I wasn't just smart. It just didn't come to me. And I remember just wanting to quit, and she said, you can do this. You can do this. Don't quit. And that being a lifeguard has helped me throughout high school and college pay for a lot of things. Yeah. And I taught swimming lessons after that as well, yeah.
What's it like to I'm glad, by the way, that your mom was so tough with you, because obviously, you know, it built the strength of character that got you through some of these, you know, situations with your, you know, life situations, clearly.
I would have never been able to move to New York and survive in New York.
Right. And the siblings, too, probably, getting the beatdowns.
Well, this is what she said. This is what she would say to me when I would go to her. Mom, George would beat me up. George has beat me up. I'm bleeding. And she said, well, it's your fault. It's your voice. It aggravates him.
That's awesome.
So
Mom's got a sense of humor.
Yeah, she does. And she does have a sense of humor. So that's where I got my sense of humor from her. And just her you got to work harder.
You got to work harder. So where's life now? What's life like now for you guys? Like, is there a rhythm to it, or it's still just insane at the house?
I try to keep a rhythm, but it's insane. Like this morning, I was going to do this podcast. I had everything all set. My neighbor's going to pick up my son from school. My babysitter couldn't get there at 4. Couldn't get there right after the kid came off the bus. And then my kid got sick. So he couldn't even get him off the bus. I had to call my neighbor. Then I found out this morning that kid has baseball practice. So now I have to ask my neighbor to drive him to the baseball practice. I had to bring the baseball stuff to my neighbor.
It's too much.
And I have a kid sick at home right now. That's why I kept my phone. That's why I was looking at my phone to make sure that he didn't throw up. It was the older
There's
one.
There's no time. See, Carrie doesn't have time for
and
Snapchat.
I have a dog.
She's not Snapchatting. She's not taking a 900 selfies like I do all day.
You are the selfie queen.
And no, I'm really not.
But the thing is, you do it so well. How do you get that angle?
It's a good arm. It's a good arm angle.
She has a long arm, and she knows the angle, and you know how to look so good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Not that you,
well, no, I know what you mean.
Don't look good without the angle.
The angle helps. There are other good deeds I do, folks. I'm just saying. Selfies, yes, but there are good deeds being done. They'll be done later. What am I talking about? I'm eating a donut now. Carrie brought donuts. I want to say that Carrie performs regularly at the Broadway Comedy Club.
Great club.
Yeah, and we just had you, and you do a lot of our shows. You do the Broadly Funnies with...
That's what I love about you, Gina. You're such an advocate for women. I love it.
Thanks. Thank you.
And there's not many of us around.
You know, there's not many, but there's... that's today's Snapchat selfie, Jim.
It's gorgeous.
Thanks. It's a filter on Snapchat that my friend Jessica showed me today. And she also worked in the comedy business. Getting back to, I do like to do my part for women in comedy. I feel like, you know, we make a lot of strides. I still feel like, you know, everything that I personally say, I feel like I have to fight. Like, I don't even like, Like, why can't I just, this is my thing, why can't I just say it once? Mm-hmm. Now, why can't I say it one time?
Right.
And it be heard the one time I say it, and it be dealt with.
Right.
I feel that I always have to have some male back it up.
And if you say it more than once, you're a bitch.
Right. So that is still
not
something,
assertive.
And I don't know, and I honestly don't know many women, unless they're like in, you know, corporate America or maybe like network executive types, that say it once and it's done, and I admire that. But I just would like to say it one time and it be heard and it just be dealt with. You know,
like that in my house too. I have to say, and then they're like, "Mom, why are you screaming?" I'm like, "Cause I've said it 5-6 times before you can hear me."
Well, they're kids.
Still.
They're never going to hear that. But in this like adult life, you know, I was out the other night, and I was at this like a little place downtown in the village, and it's like a gaming center, right? So you can play ping pong or you can play, you know, anyway. I'll say the name of the place. It's called Fat Cat. And it's a cool place. It's just like you have to like take a number to get a pool table or a ping pong table or whatever. And I saw empty tables, right? Like, well, if you're taking numbers, why are those empty? Like, let's move it along. Let's move
right.
it along. And so I go up to the guy. I'm with my friend. And the guy's just like looking at us like we're crazy. I'm like, look, the number says 692. We have 717. There's nobody there. Nobody's, you know, addressing the thing. And won't even make eye contact with us, right? And I just said, hey, make it happen. And you know what?
He made it happen.
No.
Because
no one listens to the woman.
No.
No one listens to the woman, but they should listen to the woman because she's got a lot to say. And
Well, the same goes with, I don't know if we have time for this, but the same goes for women in comedy, like, the bookers, it trickles down to the people going to the shows, but the women are the ones who buy the comedy tickets. So why wouldn't you have a woman on every single goddamn show?
Yeah, they are the ones making the plans for the most part.
Right. When you walk into Target, you see women stuff right away. Women do the shopping. Women are the rulers of the whole entire economy of the world. Why wouldn't you have a woman on every night, every comedy show? And you can. There is enough of us out there. But bookers don't do it, and people just, we haven't changed the world yet that
it's
women are funny. We're close.
We're getting there.
And we're getting there, and you're helping along. And so am I. Every time I book a show, which is hardly ever, I don't book the shows that much, but I do book a show once a year for my sister-in-law up in Boston. And every time, every year, I've done it for 10 years, every year I had a woman on the show.
You do. You are strong. You are solid. You are an unexpected, like, hurricane to me when I see you, like, because you don't, I think, to look at you, people don't often expect it, and then you bring it. So on that note, we do have to wrap up. The book will be released on Mother's Day. Mean Mommy, thank you, Carrie Louise, for being on the show. I wish you all the best, and I know we'll see you at Broadway really soon. Where can people find you again?
CarrieLouise.com. Spell my name with an I, not a Y, or you'll get the porn star. So, or unless you want both. Yes, that's true. And you can catch me on MyMommyMinute.com. And my book will be sold on Amazon, Mean Mommy.
Very good. I thank you again. I am Gina Savage. You can find me at Savage in the City on Twitter, Savage in the City Pics on Instagram. You've been listening to the Red Light Podcast Redux on WRLM Radio, and you can find us on iTunes. Please subscribe, and we thank you. Thank you, Jim Byrne, and sound engineering. We'll be back.